Welcome, everyone. If you have interest in hearing how someone comes into the U.S., gets his master's degree, and finds a way to start in real estate with no prior experience, and then goes on to do 12 syndications for 3,000 units, grows a real estate portfolio to $300 million plus, and raises over $80 million in equity, then you are going to want to hear what Ramana Karada has to say. Listen up. Ramana came to the U.S. from a small town in India with a population of just 2,000 people. Ramana still has a very strong Indian accent, so you will have to pay close attention when he's speaking. I'm telling you, it is worth it to learn from this guy. Ramana was instrumental in helping me win my first syndication deal, and I assure each of you will learn from what he has to say. On to the intro.
Welcome to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show. Each week, you will learn how to grow your wealth through real estate investing, be introduced to the players that are getting it done, and learn how you can get involved. And now, here's your host, Darren Batchelder.
A little background on Ramana Karada before we start the show. Ramana grew up in a small town in India, obtained his master's degree in the U.S., and is now a full-time real estate syndicator with 12 syndications and 3,000 units under his belt. He and his partner have grown their real estate portfolio to over $300 million and have raised over $80 million in equity. Ramana is looking to continue to scale up to over $3 billion in assets over the next 5 to 6 years. Let's listen in on his story of becoming a leader in the multifamily syndication space. Now, onto the show. Welcome, everyone. We have Ramana Karada here. And Ramana, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Darren. Thank you so much for having me in your show.
I really appreciate you coming on. So, look, we met in a mutual multifamily investor group. And, you know, I came in and you were probably in the group for a couple of years before I got there. And it was very evident early on that you and your partner, you guys formed a company called Raven Multifamily, and that you guys were basically rock stars in the group. You know, and I know that you're very humble and modest in your demeanor, but you guys really crushed it. So, you know, tell the listeners just high level, how many syndications have you done for how many units?
So, Venkat and myself, Venkat is my partner in Raven Multifamily. We both together purchased close to 3,000 units with 12 syndications so far. We exited out from three of them, and we still have 9 properties that we are actively working with our investors in DFW market.
And what time period did that span?
Was that? So we started our, we met each other in December 2015 in one of the events. And we started talking, working together in early 2016. We closed our first deal in June 30th of 2016. So we are in the month of, June 2020. It's been 4 years.
4 years. So, I mean, that's like what, a deal a quarter?
Yeah, you can call it that.
But that's crazy. I mean, people are happy to get one or two deals a year, and you guys were doing one like every 3 months. So, you know, one of the things that I really appreciated was that you guys kind of set the model for doing multiple deals. You know, there were a number of people in the group that had done one or two deals, but you guys figured out a way to scale. And in addition to that, you know, when you guys started, you guys were both still working, you know, full-time jobs. So help me understand what kind of, you know, you were in the IT space. What was your career and what was Venkat's career when you guys started?
Absolutely. So let me step back and start with my journey to United States of America, right? This is where, you know, when I was growing up, you know, I was always dreaming about, you know, studying in a different country, you know, much more sophisticated place than where I born and brought up from, right?
Where in India were you from?
There is this place called Srikakulam. That's where I kind of born and brought up in a small village. But then eventually we moved to Srikakulam. My father was a high school teacher. So with his job, we were kind of roaming around different towns and places. So I finished my 12th grade and then went to a bachelor's in a reputed university in India, a place called Kakinada. So, you know, different students come from different backgrounds, and, you know, that is where I was kind of learning about America for the first time in my life.
I'm sorry to jump in here, Romano, but you mentioned a small village in India. Well, you know, I've been to India. The population is pretty huge. So what was the size of that small village?
The place where I was born, maybe.
Where you were raised up?
A place called Kottapeta. So, you know, I would say it's around 2,000 people. But, you know, my extended family itself is around 500 people out of those 2,000, you know.
500 of the 2,000 is your extended family.
Exactly.
Wow. That's crazy. I've heard about the weddings in India. It's like the whole town.
Absolutely. I'm not too proud to say that, but I'm the first engineering graduate, out of my family. Matter of fact, my father, he wanted to do his engineering, but his dad, my grandfather, he was a farmer. So he wanted to have him raised as a farmer than an engineering graduate. So he had to convince my grandfather, to become a teacher. Obviously, he didn't send him to college to become an engineer. So he ended up his career as a high school teacher.
Fantastic. He was good with you becoming an engineer and actually leaving after getting your bachelor's in India, leaving and coming to the U.S. Your parents were good with that.
I mean, usually when we are in the fourth year of our college, we get these campus selections, right, with different companies. So I've got selected for a company in India, very reputed company, but I have this desire to come here and for the higher studies. So I joined in the company and I quit on my third day.
Oh, really? That's great.
I couldn't convince myself to continue the job and get prepared to come to, to finish my master's, right?
Right.
So, I said no. I went to my boss's boss and said, no, I'm not working anymore. So they asked about the story. I explained them. I wanted to go for my master's. They agreed. And, you know, they asked me to come back. Hey, if you can't do whatever you want to do, come back in a year. We'll keep this job for you. Right. So they did not accept my resignation letter, but rather, they kept it on hold thinking that I'll come back in a week or so.
So what did your parents feel like when you quit and you wanted to go to the U.S.? Did they support you or did they think you were crazy?
Definitely they thought, I am crazy, but, I didn't have a choice, right? I mean, yeah. I asked them, hey, I need this one-time choice, I'm going to prove that. And within next 1 year, I worked hard and I tried and tried and finally came to my master's in University of Texas, El Paso.
Awesome.
So yeah, that was 2001. So I finished my master's in electrical/computer engineering in the spring semester of 2003. At that time, the market was not so great to get a job in the study area of where in which I did my master's, right? So I had to, in order to get a job, I have to learn some new skill, and that happened to be SAP. So it's a software program, ERP software that big companies use for their end-to-end operations. So I learned it and I started my first job in LA in 2004.
As a consultant implementing SAP applications?
That's exactly right, yes.
Okay, so SAP is like one of the largest ERP systems available across the world. And, consultants are highly sought after for those implementations. So it wasn't like it was a nothing job. They look for very highly qualified people to fill those spots.
Absolutely. So I used to work with CFOs, C-level executives, with the reports that I used to build for them to make better decisions in their daily operations, right? So I worked for different companies like Bank of America, Westinghouse, ADP, Dr. Pepper Staple Group. But actually, Dr. Pepper Staple Group brought me to Dallas, actually. I worked for many companies across the country. So my journey started in LA with my first job, and then I went to Portland, Oregon, from there New Jersey to work in a utility company. From there, I went to Atlanta, stayed there for 3 years in Atlanta, and then went back to LA. Again, went back to Atlanta. Then a manager from my Atlanta job kind of moved to a position in Dr. Pepper Snapple Group. I worked with him for 3 years, and he fortunately, asked me to come over to join his team in Plano. So that's how I ended up coming into Dallas market in 2009.
Okay.
Yeah.
So before we keep going down that path, let me just go back again to your childhood. When you're in India, you're in this small village, 2,000 people, 500 of which are your extended family. And at some point during your childhood, you brought it up multiple times. You had this, desire to leave India and go overseas someplace and go on an adventure and go see the world and learn outside of your space. So what age do you think that you started having those feelings?
I would say 15 to 16.
So in your high school years.
Exactly. Yeah.
And were you afraid to go? Were you excited to go? Was it a mix of all the above? Did you just know in your gut feel that you were going to be successful?
It's a tough question to answer, but, I always have this dream, right? I mean, there are a lot of people going out of country for their jobs and stuff like that. So definitely I used to get motivated. But one thing, used to run in my mind, if I recall, how do these guys manage their, missing their family? Mm. Okay. That was one question, it was running until I came here and spent for a couple of years, I guess. Then I kind of used to it,
So do you go back once a year or once every other year to visit family?
Very first time, I think I came in 2001 and I went back in 2006. But since then, I've been going at least every 2 years to 1 year once. you know, parents are getting older, and I have a sibling also in India. So definitely that is a place that I have to go, you know.
Absolutely. So one of the reasons why I ask you about your childhood and ask you some questions in terms of like what you're, if you can go back and think to yourself what you were feeling back then is that I think, you know, just in my own personal gut feel and from reading books and whatnot, is that most successful people at some point in their life, and it doesn't have to be in childhood, but at some point in life, they have this desire to go, you know, do something. And the difference between them and other people that have that feeling is that they actually took action and did it, you know? So I've met a lot of people that have some great ideas and some dreams that they're afraid to take that step, you know? And you took a pretty darn big step by leaving India and coming to the US. And then you had a challenge finding a job after you got your master's, but you ended up finding out what skills were needed. You ended up getting those skills and got into the SCP world. And then you started traveling all over the country. So here's a guy, you know, from a small town, just bopping around in major cities in the US.
Absolutely. I mean, so even though, you know, I think I have this entrepreneurial mindset from childhood. You know, my father has been a teacher, and my uncles and aunts, you know, my mom's side, they're all like into small businesses, right? So that entrepreneurial mindset came from that side, I believe. So whatever, you know, I think through, whatever I see, sometimes my mind automatically goes that side. So I started my job in 2004, right? So, you know, we all meet a lot of people, a lot of business people, a lot of colleagues and all, right? So many of them are into some sort of business or some investments, you know, while they do their job, right? So in 2007, I think a friend of mine introduced me to one of his friends who was planning to start a startup in India. Okay. So I met that guy over the phone a couple of times, and the presentation he did with the projections and all, it mesmerized me. So, you know, I was making decent money with my SAP consulting job, and you know, I was saving a little bit while rest of the folks are investing in different places. I kind of decided to place some of my money into that startup. It's like a Priceline kind of company.
Okay.
Where an aggregator, right?
Yes. So you didn't end up going to work with them, but you ended up putting some of your money into that company as some seed capital.
Exactly. I put in a lot of money, in fact.
And how did it turn out?
So, you know, me and I think four or five other investors pumped in a lot of money, and we all worked for the company almost for a year or a couple of years by helping, you know, other than our work hours, right? But that product for Indian market came a little early, so we didn't capture the right market potential for that. So we still have the company floating around, but definitely, we needed more capital to make it successful. So that guy, who's leading that effort, he's still trying, and, you know, we are in contact, but have to see if somebody will come and write a big check to buy out us. But let's see. I mean, I think we still have some time for that.
Well, you didn't say this, but it sounds like, you know, you put a lot of money. You did say that piece, and you put a lot of time and effort for a few years, and it doesn't sound like it turned into a home run. and it's still out there. So then you decide for some reason to get into real estate. And just because we've had conversations outside of this conversation, I know that you started out in retail strip centers. So help me understand how you made that transition. And, you know, how did you still put money out there after having, you know, your first kind of big investment, you know, not turn into a home run?
So, I mean, that's a good question, right? So what happened is, after seeing ups and downs with this investment that I made, so definitely that taught me what kind of businesses that I have to avoid versus where I shall put my focus into. Okay. Then I started analyzing different businesses, local businesses. Like, you know, I started with restaurants, gas stations, medical offices, retail centers. So the list was going on and on. So I had to make a call whether to be in the business or on the business. Okay. So with my day job, most of these, businesses, like where you have to be there, doesn't work, right?
Right.
So I took, I think, a good 2 to 3 years, transitioning from that software investment to a real estate investment. Finally, I made a call to partner with a few of other friends and bought a retail center in Houston market.
Okay.
That happened in late 2014. So immediately, right after we purchased, there was another opportunity that came in. We purchased another property, in early 2015. So those two investments gave me enough boost to make a move in into commercial real estate, right? So I looked at some of the retail centers in Plano, McKinney market, very interesting opportunities, but I couldn't convince people, hey, I have this opportunity, these are the projections, do you want to partner with me? So I used to get a very good response, but by the time, are you guys ready to send the money, right? Then people used to back out. So it happened a couple of times that gave me a lesson, one more lesson, right? So, hey, you have to work with sophisticated investors, the people who know ins and out of these businesses. So you can explain, your friends and colleagues or your family members, but do they really buy your story of buying a real estate? No. I mean, there are a lot of unknowns for them, right? So that's when I found this mentoring group by Brad Sandra, and that's where we met. So I immediately joined. I mean, I didn't hesitate to join in his program. That's a paid program, but I think I should say all the credit goes to Brad Sandra for my, I don't call it as a success because I'm still a baby in this game. So definitely, whatever the credit I get, that goes to him.
That's awesome. I'm glad that we met through the group, and I've met so many fantastic people. It's a way to meet a lot of like-minded people. But you know, one thing that's interesting hearing your story in more detail is so many people, including myself. Like I came in, you had already been in the group for a couple of years, and you guys were in the midst of scaling, right? So I came in the group at the end of 2018. And if you guys are doing a deal a quarter, you already have 5 or 6 deals under your belt. And the talk in the group is like, holy cow, Ramana and Venkat, they just, keep getting deal after deal after deal. And so it's easy to kind of think these guys are just overnight success, but hearing your story, it's like, no, here's a guy who, was in a small town in India, had a desire to come to the US. He fought kick and scratch, to learn what job he should get. He starts traveling around the country with SAP, and then he saves up a bunch of his money and puts it into a company, and it doesn't necessarily completely work out. But it didn't scare you off from taking your next chance. And your next chance was with the retail centers. And then you ended up investing in getting into multifamily in a mentorship group. So, I mean, you didn't stop taking action. You kept learning along the way. So many people, I think, just think, you know, when they win the Super Bowl, like, oh, they're just an overnight success. But there's so much hard work and learning that happened to get you there.
Absolutely. I think some of the credit goes to my son, especially, I guess.
Your son?
So what happened is...
How old is your son?
Right now he's 10, but I think he was 4 years old. My daughter just born. So I was traveling for my SAP work, right? I think I was traveling to Oklahoma City at that time. So my schedule used to be like, weekends attend these meetups or trainings from, you know, different groups or meetings and all, right? I think that was early in the, 2015, I believe. So weekdays from Monday to Thursday, I used to be in Oklahoma City. Fridays, wake up, work until 5 p.m. and then, go for a drink with fellow investors and all. Saturday, Sunday used to be tough schedule too. So my daughter just born and mommy was taking care of the daughter, obviously she's younger, right? So my son was not getting enough attention from me, not from mommy. So one fine day, she came to my office room and he said, "Daddy, I will not disturb you. Why are you going out of home from Monday to Thursday?" That kind of put me in the spot. Hey, am I doing the right thing? I'm spending all my 7 days outside of the home. Even though I am home, I'm literally not spending any time with him.
Wow, 4 years old.
4 years old. I wasn't expecting from him at that age, you know.
But, you know, again, the other thing that happened was when he said that, you reflected upon it.
Absolutely.
You know, you reflected on it, and then it sounds like you made a career change based off of that, you know, where a lot of people would just, "Hey, son, because I have to make money to pay for the bills," you know, but you actually reflected on it and you made a change. So now you're at Strip Centers, you get that from your son, you join this group. You know, why did you switch from Strip Centers to multifamily?
That's a good question, right? So obviously I was looking for some sophisticated investors to, to pull some capital into Strip Centers or any other commercial real estate. But then after joining in this multifamily group, it's kind of eye-opener for me. So there are different categories of commercial real estate, right? It could be storage or retail, land or medical offices, so many sectors, right? Mobile home parks, you can categorize into 100 different categories. But then what are the basic needs, right, of human beings? We need to have proper food, clothing, and then a place to live. So housing is a basic need of everybody, okay? You can have a $1 million home or a $500 rent-paying apartment, right?
Right.
So, rain or shine, everybody has to sleep under a roof. So, if you invest in real estate, you definitely are in a much, better class of real estate than any other. Like storage, when people need to store something, you may rent a space to, in storage. Hospitality, it can be a business travel or vacation travel, right? Those are all like on need basis. It's not like an everyday thing that somebody pays to rent for or something like that, right?
Right.
So that gave me, this mentor made my, life a lot easier by showing a different class that I never thought of before, is the multifamily to be investing in. And also, if you look at some of the stats, right, affordability gap is growing between renting and owning. So definitely that helps with, a lot more traction into apartment industry. If you want to further extend it, like household formations, the millennials, all this stuff aggregating to make multifamily investments are more, I wouldn't say successful, but definitely, definitely comfort.
It's a good story that there's all these other factors that are kind of pointing to additional resiliency compared to other, options.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that. But it's still interesting to me because, I thought of you guys as being like overnight successes. You kind of just think, these guys just came in, joined the group, didn't know anything, and then all of a sudden they're doing a deal a quarter. But it wasn't that. You guys had one. You had solid business experience. You had experience dealing with C-level executives. So when you started to talk to investors, you already kind of knew how to talk to, people that were pretty savvy in the financial space. And, but you were in search of what's the best means, to proceed forward. And you wanted to do something that was going to be a benefit to your family that would give you, the flexibility of your time so that you could be around for your family, which is extremely admirable.
Absolutely. So this is how the journey started, right? We both were underwriting, me and my partner, underwriting so many deals every single day, every single week, every single month. So because we did not have a resume to show that we bought some properties, none of the Dallas brokers were giving an opportunity to win a property, right? So,
it's so funny to hear you say that, because now it's like you guys are known by every broker group. And you have a extremely solid reputation, but you had to build that reputation. It didn't come overnight, and so new people that are trying to break into the space, they think that like you just had it, right? But you had to work for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It started with a 100-unit property in Oklahoma City. By the time we bought that, I made some relations in Phoenix market that gave a 120-unit property. So by showing those two properties, one of the top broker in Dallas market gave an opportunity to win a 300-unit property. So since then, we were not needing to go outside of DFW. So next 10 properties are from DFW.
That's fantastic. Yeah, so you guys have built a reputation for being guys that do what they say they're going to do, and that if I could use the word, that you guys are closers. That the brokers know if you guys put in an offer that you're going to close on it. So how this is a very much a relationship business. How do you think you got that reputation?
So basically, like you said, we worked so hard to win our first few deals, right? So that those first few transactions taught us, how to make this happen in a streamlined fashion. Okay, you anticipate what would be the need in the closing process, so that you bring your resources even before your lender or your attorney who's running your transaction closing, right? Or the buyer. So we built all the resources together. So commercial real estate is not a one-man show. It's a team sport, right? So a lot more resources need to work together. It starts with identifying a property. Once you identify it, you have to underwrite it, make sure it produces the result that investors look for. okay, now you make an offer, you compete with 10 different buyers, you win the deal, right? So now the fun starts. You need to have the right loan lined up for the property. So you need to work with right lender. Okay, you need to work with equity. So it could be either a private equity or own equity or syndication. So you have to present your opportunity to all different sources to see who would be interested in that deal. Okay, so the location, the opportunity, the vintage, so many factors come into picture. Once you identify, you have to spend your time on due diligence because these transactions are millions of dollars of work, right? You make sure that you are buying the right product. You know, if I am a seller, I don't want to, it's not that I would do it, but rather, you know, you have to, you are representing a bunch of investors. So you make sure you have your engineering reports ready. Your rental projections, your management company has to be in place. Each and every resource has to be coming to the table for the closing. Once you close the property, then the actual real fun starts. Now you have to keep up your investor projections to make sure, you know, you can buy more properties, right, with the same investor group.
Right. Hey, Ramana, let me go back just a couple steps. So on most deals in the DFW market and in other major markets, you know, there's, you know, it's very competitive on every deal, right? There's, mm-hmm. I mean, it could be 10, 15 offers and five or six go into best and final. And maybe there's three that stand out as being pretty close that are competitive, and the seller and the broker get together and, you know, have a conversation, you know, who should we go with, right? Well, you guys have figured out somehow a way to have those guys pick you guys more often than not. So any tips for, you know, that's what, when I talk to people, I say, think about that conversation at the beginning of the process, because if you get into the finals, that's what's going to happen. It's going to be you and two other buying groups, and why should they pick you? So you guys have figured out somehow a means for them to say, you know what? We should go with Venkat Ramana.
Absolutely, right?
So yeah, what's the key there?
See, before we identify a property, right, we want to make sure there are, I think, around 7,000 apartment complexes are available in DFW market. Okay. So at least 10% of those properties would be in transaction one way or other, like in the in a given year, right? And maybe 10% is much higher, maybe 5%. Okay. So, you know, once broker sends a notification after they're listing a deal, we spend many hours to understand the property before we call the broker that, hey, we want to set up a tour. We underwrite the property, we look at the demographics, we look at the location, all the 9 years, you know, some people do it afterwards, but we want to make sure that we know about the property before even we make our first phone call. Okay. If you get educated about the property and all with all other details and then request for a tour, broker believes that these guys spent enough time to understand and now they really want to pursue this deal. Because see, there could be hundreds of buyers in the market. For the sake of touring the property, they tour the property. Okay, not every buyer is a real serious buyer, right?
Right.
So the brokers will not have enough time to entertain 100 groups. Okay. Out of 100 calls they get, 100 tours, they, 100 calls they get, they know that who is the real buyer and who is not. Okay. They guess based on our questions and our, mindset, because they do a lot of business, so they can figure out if it's a real buyer or not. Okay.
So from your perspective, you've built credibility with the broker right away because they know if Venkat Ramana are calling me on this property, they've already done their homework on it.
Exactly.
And so, you know, I've talked to different syndicators have different approaches. So some syndicators kind of have a shotgun approach. They're going to put an offer out on a lot of deals and they know that, you know, it's a numbers game and they're going to put a lot of offers out. And then, you know, when they get in the best and final, then they'll start digging in. And that is one approach. And your approach sounds like it's more, you spend a lot more time on the underwriting. And when you do get to the point where you want to do a property tour, you've already done a lot of homework and the broker knows that, you know, right away.
Exactly. And, you know, with the investor base I have and the lending connections we have, they should definitely feel comfortable with the offer that I'm making. And over this period, right, we never retrade it for nothing, right?
Right.
So that speaks for yourself. I mean, like you're saying, but reputation speaks for yourself, right?
Right.
So the retrading is, I mean, if it's an absolute thing, then why not? But not for every single thing that you go back to seller and request for a retrade, no. We don't have that reputation, which is good.
Which is good. Now you talked about your investors and you got, you know, a strong investor database. Again, when I came into the group and you guys were killing it, I was like, you know, are these guys just calling back to their hometown in India and they like have all these family members that are they're sending money across overseas? Like, how are they raising all this capital? Like through all the deals that you've put together, I believe you've raised somewhere between 60 and 70 million in equity. Is that correct?
I think with the new construction deals and the 12 multifamily, I think it's around $80 million.
$80 million. So $80 million you guys have raised. And so is it just one phone call to India and your family? Or did you have to bust your tail and build relationships here in the U.S.?
It's not from India for sure. It's only from US. And most of this money out of this 80 million, I would say 80-90%, I would say, from sophisticated investors. It's not from somebody who's walking on the street and made a phone call and they invested even more. So these investors, like, you know, with a proper judgment, they invested this money into these deals.
But that's so encouraging for people that haven't gotten into this space. They think to themselves like, oh, this space is for other people. This space is for, you know, people that were born into it. But no, you know, you came over from India, you made your way, you figured it out, you got into the space, and you were able to build trust with people here in the US that, you know, provided $80 million of equity to invest in these deals because they got to the point where they know, like, and trust you.
Absolutely. So we did see what an investor has to look for, right? So it's like what I really see, like, I invest in other deals too, right? I want to make sure that these investors have enough track record to see what they're saying is true. Okay. I request every passive investor to vet these sponsors multiple times if needed. More than now than before, these passive investors have to look at the numbers. It's all about numbers game, right? They have to go through each and every detail of their underwriting so that they don't need to go back to investor after they send their money, hey, why the deal is performing in a different way than expected, right? There are a lot of information available with meetups or online or mentoring groups. everybody can get educated. So, see, for example, like there are a lot of stock investors, right? Stocks and bonds or options or whatnot, right, in the marketplace. So they read about different companies before they buy these shares, right? Similarly, if they're investing a $50,000 to $100,000, definitely they have to make sure they vet this process, check some personal references if need to be. That way, you feel more comfortable. And then most of the times what happens is these investors invest in only one deal, expecting that their money will get double or whatnot, right? Whatever the projection. It may not happen in the way that they would expect. So I would request to invest in multiple properties so that they can take advantage of these tax benefits and, you know, they can learn more about the industry, which will help them invest more.
Absolutely. Then that's one of the things that's got me charged up being in the industry is that, you know, I think that there's still a lot of people that don't know that this is an option. You know, they don't, I was always one that put my money in ETFs and stocks and until a couple of years ago when I got involved, I didn't realize I can invest in these larger multifamily deals, you know, and like you said, there's other asset classes as well. We're just kind of focused on the multifamily space, but, hey, I wanted to applaud you also and thank you because when you and Venkat are no longer in the same group as us, but when you were, you actually were one of the coaches. And, I had a number of deals that I had come close on as a first time guy. And, you know, I was like, well, I want to work with switch up my coach and I want to be with somebody that is still winning deals in this very competitive market. And so I ended up asking you to be a coach for me on a deal. And it just so happened that was my first deal. And I remember it wasn't like you went through everything with a fine tooth comb, but you gave me just a couple pointers that I really felt like helped me win the deal. One was, part of my business plan was to implement RUBS for water, where the property was paying for the water. And when I received the budget back from the property management company, it was a 1-year budget. And I was like, Ramana, like, you know, a lot of the, you know, additional savings comes in year 2. you were like, just ask them for a 2-year budget. I was like, well, that was simple. Like I didn't think of it, you know? So when I did that, it improved the projections significantly. So that was one big factor. And then 2 was at the very end of the buying process when they were about to make selections. We have a buyer's broker within the group. And you were like, Darren, man, you need to be on top of the broker. You know, the broker is the one that's going to make that recommendation. So he needs to know that you really want this deal. And that shifted my focus to spend more time with the broker. And so just those 2 little pointers, you know, coming from a seasoned guy that was successful, was huge and helped us win the deal. So I thank you for that.
Oh, absolutely, man. I was so happy that you got that deal. We spent, if not a whole lot of time, definitely decent time. And I was hoping you get it and you got it. How is the deal running now?
Oh, it's doing fantastic. We had a little hiccup with being under COVID. We had slow pay, but I think April we came in at 90%, and then everybody said May was going to be worse than April, but actually May ended up being better than April. So I think we're good. And actually, we just ended up hitting 100% occupancy for the first time in the year and a half we've owned it. So, you know, crazy in the middle of this crisis that we hit 100%.
Wow, congratulations, man. For you and your investors.
Yeah, thank you very much. So, but I appreciate you, your guidance through it all. So, you know, talking about COVID, how is that impacting your business? You're still managing 9 properties, without having to go through all the, you know, I know that there's a lot of steps that each syndicator has gone through to manage that, but kind of what's your, we're about halfway through it right now in terms of, you know, the 120 days. You know, what's your take on it? It's been not as bad as we thought. You know, in general, for the multifamily space, has been pretty resilient. What's your viewpoint going forward?
I mean, I see, out of 9 properties, I think one or two properties, I saw like 10 to 15% drop in collections in April and continued with May. But rest of the properties are within that 1 to 10%, right? So for the impact to the world, I think the 10% is acceptable for the C product that I have.
Right.
So if economy is still strong, you know, if the white collar job loss is not going to be as much as, you know, as everybody was thinking, then the impact will be okay. I think we'll be recovering very soon. But if the white collar job loss goes up super high, I think that's when we'll have that ripple effect going into C product in the next 2 to 3 months.
Next, when the stimulus ends, yeah, kind of at the end of July, maybe going into August, it may get more difficult. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right. Yeah.
So, you know, here's, yeah, and you are in the technology space, so you probably still have a lot of people that, you know, are in that consulting space. I you know, I have a lot of friends that, you know, whatever, whether it be golfing buddies or just, you know, other contacts that I've met through the years that work for multinationals. And so I asked them, you know, what's your take, you know, on what's going on? And I'm pretty much getting a consistent theme that, you know, of all the employees that have been furloughed, that they're not going to take 100% back. And this is just sidebar conversations that I have with people. So it's not written in stone by any means. But a lot of these companies are saying, you know, the bottom, you know, 20%, you know, we're probably not going to invite back. And, right, you know, so that makes me a little nervous when you think about 30 to 40 million, you know, unemployed, even if it's 10 or 20%, 20% of 30 million is 6 million people unemployed. You know, I don't know if that comes to fruition or not. I mean, driving around here in Texas, it looks like things are jumping back to speed pretty quick, but you know, time will tell, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, definitely, just like you, I think I'm so thankful to be part of Texas, right? Things are getting back. I mean, people are heading to beaches and, you know, restaurants, grocery store. I mean, if you drive on these highways in Dallas, right, I see that roads are packed.
Right.
So I don't see this COVID effect, you know, as much as we would think. Of course, still schools are, you know, if they're going to open or not, unknown, but things are getting better for sure.
Another factor that I didn't think about when it first came about, but it, you know, came to my mind as we were in it for, you know, a month, 4 to 6 weeks, was that, you know, we may, you know, Texas has been a, you know, population growth state, and you know, more jobs have been created here than any other state in the last number of years. But when this happened, I thought everything was going to slow down everywhere. But, you know, one of the things that may happen is, you know, people in New York and people in California and Chicago and like big metropolitan areas where it's very costly may decide to move to states like Texas and Florida and Arizona and the Carolinas, where, you know, before they felt like they had to go to the office, but now things may be changing where they let, you know, companies let people, you know, work from home more. And so if that's the case, why not live in an area that is much more affordable?
Absolutely. That's like you said, right? And within Texas, I mean, Houston has a little bit of oil impact. I think that oil will make Austin and Dallas make, you know, more desirable place for these folks who would like to come from either side of the coast. You know, that will give me enough boost to maybe get onto new construction phase.
Oh, so you think the new construction may be a strong play?
That's what I'm thinking, because definitely from my business point of view, our properties are being taxed as A-class properties, especially Dallas County for 2020, right? Because of the storms and all, insurance is going up, but the rents are not going up as much as you would expect. Payroll is going up. And, if you buy the C product, like plumbing and all other issues, your expenses are getting more uncontrollable, which makes me think, you can set a right expectation of your return projections to your investors with a better class of the product.
Right.
Are it a B plus or A? Or build new product and, as the population is continue to grow, for the reasons that you mentioned, right?
Right.
I think that should be a place, should be in our path of progress.
That's an interesting play. I mean, we've been so focused on the value play, the BC properties, and the thought process was, when we go into an economic downturn, the thought process was, okay, people are going to be unable to afford the A properties, the brand new construction. And so the bottom 20% are going to flow down to the B properties, and the bottom 20% of the B property tenants are going to flow down to C properties, and A properties may suffer because he's during an economic downturn. But in this downturn, it seems like it's the BC, properties that are, more impacted, because the white collar employees haven't been as impacted as hospitality and restaurant and that sort of thing. Well, that's very interesting. I would be interested to hear about your next new construction deal. So, keep me posted on that. So, Romana, outside of work, what do you enjoy to do?
I want to do many things, but time is limited. definitely travel is one thing that me and my wife, we do.
Travel? Where do you like to travel to?
Want to travel entire world, but so far, I was able to visit like maybe 42 states in the U.S.,
Awesome.
I haven't made any trips to Europe, but been to some of the cruise trips to South America and up into Alaska. So those were fun. My kids are still young, so I want to have them grow a little bigger so that we all can enjoy international travel more than now. So I'm just waiting for them to, maybe 2-3 years older from now.
Awesome.
I like to read, but my time is not permitting.
Hey, going back to your son, like, has he ever come back up to you and said that he appreciated that you changed career paths and you're around more?
He might have the feeling in him, but he never expressed that.
he's a boy, right? I mean, a lot of boys, so... To get him to say something other than yes or no, or talk sports or something, whatever, or school, whatever he's into, sometimes is difficult. But so what's the big? I mean, you guys have just accomplished so much by 3,000 units, 12 syndications, $80 million equity raise. Now looking at potential new construction deals. What's next for Romana? What's the big stretch goal?
There are a lot of successful syndicators in the marketplace, right? Every day I wake up, I look up to these folks like Swapnil Agarwal. This guy is from Houston. He made his $300,000 investment into $3 billion.
Wow. $300,000 into $3 billion?
I mean, that's his initial investment, but he's very successful at what he does, right? Similarly, Scott Everett from S2,
right?
A few billion dollars. John Briggs from Presidium. David Moore from NightWest. Michael Becker, from SBI Advisory. So when these people come to my mind, I mean, I get more inspired. I want to take my 300 million portfolio to, the 3 billion sooner than later.
So is that your next goal? So you've 300 million in assets under management now, and you'd like to grow that to 3 billion.
That's what, I'm not shooting for stars, but definitely slowly but steadily want to take it up to that level.
Do you have a timeline when you ideally like to be there?
I mean, it took 4 years to make this 300 million. It should progress much faster, but if it happens in the next 5-6 years, I think that would be fantastic.
Awesome. Awesome. It's crazy to think about how you started out and it's just getting that first deal. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well now we're 12, 13 deals in and now we're looking at, these other guys. You just keep on looking for the people above you and how can you get there? So that's awesome. Ramana, there's a lot of people out there. I was one of them 2 years ago. But there may be somebody listening today that, has interest in passively investing in real estate, but they don't really know how to do it. Could you explain, how do you get involved in a passive multifamily investment?
I think earlier I was making some comments like, passive investor has to be sophisticated, which means an educated investor, So if you vet the deal and the sponsor upfront, you will have less headaches in the later in the process, right? When we as sponsors, when we buy these properties, we go with the market standard assumption, right? So for example, COVID, we are dealing with COVID right now that nobody would expect it, but COVID will hit the market. And how these properties would perform, right? So if you have an understanding on what you're investing in, I think you'll have a better sleep than blindly investing, okay? So it could be hospitality, it could be retail, it could be multifamily, anything, but you need to be, a little bit educated than a naive before investing. I highly recommend that.
So, okay? In order to get, some of these people may be doctors and lawyers and, software sales guys that, have excess cash. They'd like to, diversify out of the stock market. The stock market got pummeled. Now it's come back like 60-70%, but it's still nerve wracking. And so maybe they don't want all of their assets there. So they have time to invest some time in understanding it, but maybe not, have as much as somebody that's going to be a syndicator. Where do they get educated? Books, podcasts, meetup groups, mentorship groups?
I think all of the above are right. Depends on each individual. Nothing comes for free in this world, right? If you are getting a service for something, that you have to pay for it. I highly recommend, these mentoring groups to get educated formally. Okay, you don't have to go to a college and get a degree on it, but rather you need to know the end-to-end process. Okay, there are a lot of mentors, a lot of educational groups available either online or in person. Like you said, meetups, right? Meetups have been very famous in the last few years. So you will meet different folks, and you can get to hear a lot of folks talking. So one way or another, each investor has to get educated. That education is very crucial, if you ask me. Let's say I have a deal that I want to raise $10 million, for example, right? It's just a numbers game. I can present any number to attract the capital, but if I want to do as a full-time job, like this is my bread and butter, right? So I have to make sure I present the right numbers so that I can keep up my projections in line with actuals, right? So if I don't do that in multiple deals, then you know, nobody is going to invest with me.
Right.
You see my point?
Absolutely. And if you don't have to join a mentorship group, but you know, one of the big advantages of doing that is you surround yourself with like-minded people, and then you get to meet the syndicators, right? But then you also get to talk to a lot of passive investors, and people talk, right? So people will share their experiences of, you know, hey, look, I've invested in 5 deals, and you know, I really enjoy the communication. I really enjoy, you know, working with these sponsors, and you know, this one or two, you know, it just, you know, they set the expectations here, and you know, it just hasn't, you know, come to fruition. Either their assumptions were off, or the communication was off, or whatever the case may be. But in one conversation, it may steer you to, you know, to give you a good frame of reference on some good qualities to look for in, you know, a leadership team and a sponsorship team.
Absolutely. Like you said.
So, Ramana, I think that's about all we have for today. I really appreciate you coming on the show. I very much appreciate your guidance and handholding to help me get my first deal. You're a class act. You know, you don't come across as being this hugely flamboyant, like, in your face guy, but you reflect on things and then you give solid wisdom and guidance. And I appreciate that. And I think that's probably why your investors keep coming back to you, you know, over and over and invest in multiple deals with you. So I appreciate you coming on the show. I look forward to working with you going forward, looking forward to hearing all the great things that you and Venkat and Raven Multifamily are up to. And with that said, if somebody on the line wants to reach out to you and get to know you better and reach out to you, what's the best way for them to contact you?
First of all, thank you so much for having me on your show, Darren. It's my pleasure. So folks can contact me via my email. I'm going to give my phone number. They can text me or call me. I am available, pretty much anytime, any day of the week. Not at 5 a.m., but...
no, right.
Yeah, so my phone number is 214-799-9127. I repeat, 214-799-9127. And my email is ramana@ravanmultifamily.com. ramana@raven, R-A-V-E-N, multifamily.com. So I'll be very prompt with my either text messages or emails or phone calls. If I can't talk, I'll let you know, but you guys can reach out anytime.
Fantastic. And I will also include that information on the show notes when this comes out. And again, really appreciate you coming on the line. You guys have killed it, and you guys are a model for other people that want to learn how to scale multifamily. So thank you very much. And listeners, I hope that you guys enjoyed that one. That's the American spirit, man. I love entrepreneurial stories. I mean, he came into the country, you know, with nothing, right? And then he's built it up to $300 million, and now he wants to grow it to be a $3 billion asset management business. So that's fantastic. Until next week, signing off.
Thank you for listening to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show at darrenbatchelder.com. If you liked the episode, please provide us with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform of choice. If you already provided us with a 5-star review, then thank you, and please share the show with a friend.